Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today's going to be a very insightful program. Of course, we're going to begin with the latest on health and healing, including a study from Shandong University in China about how reishi, that's R-E-I-S-H-I, mushroom extract, suppresses cervical cancer cell malignancy. That's important. And then we're going to have an in-depth look at some issues that the mainstream media is not touching, and if they do touch on it, it's always with a bias. You're going to hear an exclusive interview between Plandemic's creator, Mikey Willis, and not the whole thing, just a short piece. It's only about two minutes, 26 seconds long, because he decided to find out what did Bill Gates actually do with those hundreds of millions or billions of dollars he spent on the vaccine campaign to eradicate polio and all these other conditions in India. Well, you can't find anything up on the internet. How did that happen? How did that get scrubbed? He went to India. Ah, something no one from any network, no newspaper did, even though they have bureau chiefs in those countries. They could have found this. He found it. That's an exclusive. Also today, we're going to look at an understanding completely different that you have not been exposed to. This is scientifically valid. Only official charts and documents have been used. We've methodically gone over them for the veracity of their claims, where you can watch this, by the way, this chart. You can see it. If you go to prn.fm, and it's right there on the main page, you'll see it. It's a short clip. It's 8 minutes, but it's called Casedemic, meaning we've been looking at the wrong figures, and this proves it. Casedemic means cases are not the same as deaths. And the initial deaths were almost exclusively in most countries from people with comorbidities and those who were senior citizens. And as now the truth is coming out, everywhere, from top epidemiologists and directors of health policy in different countries, they didn't know that it would be that serious. So as a result, those people in critical care and nursing homes were not given any special attention. They died, but not the rest of the population. So what does this tell us? When you see these graphs, and please go to prn.fm when we start that segment so you can watch the 8-minute clip. Now, if you can't watch it for any reason, you'll still get enough insight to understand it. Then afterwards, Richard Gale will be joining us to explain it. Then we're going to have part two of our discussion with the film done, and a highly recommended film, Pandemic, The Pandemic Part 2, or Plandemic Part 2, I suggest you pick it up at about 8 minutes in. I do not support the part of the film where he tries to defend Judy Mikovits, because none of the issues that she raised and made statements about has she provided any actual documentation. But the rest of it is absolutely spot on, because every single statement stated, you actually see the actual government or scientific peer review study right there. So you're not hearing his opinion. He is non-political. He is very humanistic, very spiritual guy. And it's the best film thus far done on this topic. We're going to hear that. And then we're going to finish off the program today with a woman I wanted to give you a preview of her. I consider her a very remarkable mind. It is Melanie Phillips. For a long time, she was a senior editor at The Guardian, the most liberal and progressive newspaper, at least until recently in Great Britain. And then something happened, and she began to see that the people who were calling themselves liberal and progressive were just the opposite. And so she discusses the conservative failures that caused our woke movement. This is one of those really turn a light on your conscious discussions. And we're only going to have about 8 minutes of her program, but tonight, a full hour. Melanie Phillips, tonight, full hour, 7 o'clock, everybody should pay attention. Stuff you have not heard from anyone anywhere. That's our show, so we have a lot to share. Let us begin, of course, with the latest on health and healing. According to the latest reporting from Shandong in China, they found that there was strong anti-tumor effects on cervical cancer cells from the Ganoderma lucidium polysaccharide. In other words, that's the active physiological properties inside the reishi mushroom extract. Now, I know that there are a lot of holistic physicians using the Ganoderma and other mushrooms, like the maitake mushroom, for different types of cancer. This is just the latest. This is just out 2 days ago. So that's good news. And by the way, something else is good. I received an email 2 days ago, and it was right in the middle of my show. And this was from a doctor I have not seen or heard from since, I think, around 1985. I remember sitting with him, and I told him what I believed he should do. His name is Dr. Carl Humiston, Harvard graduate, medical school, top of his class, and one of the leaders in the holistic health movement in New York City, medical movement. And they went after him, and they got his license. And he didn't go to the media. I believed he should have. Anyhow, I'm inviting him on. He is 91, still active, still now he does Rolfing, but he has a very interesting story to tell, and he's the last. They're all past. They're all dead. Atkins and Levin and Rosenberg, all those people. So at 91, he can tell you about a time in New York where people who were practicing alternative medicine were fearful, and their patients were also concerned. It'll be a very interesting topic because it shows you how absolutely decrepit and corrupt New York State Medical Office was. And it's just part of the course in New York. What are we talking about? Everything about New York is corrupt. Trust me, everything, especially City Hall. Anyhow, but back then, a lot of the doctors were using mushroom extract. Well, today, a lot of them are doing it also. Also from Amsterdam University, which is, as you know, Amsterdam's in the Netherlands, and this was published in the European Journal of Nutrition. When you have vitamin D levels and vitamin K levels that are low, get this, you increase your risk of dying during a 14-year median period. Wow. So if you want to die prematurely, and that's what they're saying here, they quote it, a study published on August 18, 2020 in the European Journal of Nutrition revealed a greater risk of premature mortality among men and women with decreased levels of vitamin D and K. Quote, nutritional deficiencies have been recognized as important contributors to disease and increased mortality. A previous analysis of our cohort indicated that sufficient vitamin D and K alone are associated with survival benefits and reduced cardiovascular disease. End quote. So for goodness sakes, get your vitamin D and K every day. It's not difficult. It's not expensive. Also from Autonomous University of Pueblo in Mexico, they found that gallic acid, that's G-A-L-L-I-C, improves recognition, memory, decreases oxidation, decreases inflammation, and especially inflammation of the hippocampus. Also, it can help you if you have metabolic syndrome, diabetes, overweight, all right, insulin resistance. So it helps with all those conditions. Now, you probably are not familiar with this, and you're not going to be able to run out and get it. It is found in the gallnuts, phenolic acids, witch hazel, tea leaves, oak bark, things like that. But that's not how you get it. You get it in an extract, purified form. And it has substantial benefit if you have neurodegeneration, any kind of memory impairment, especially those of you who might have early cognitive loss. Okay, that's good. Melatonin is linked to improved brain function in child concussion, University of Queensland. So melatonin is, you don't need it very much, milligram, 2 milligrams, helps you sleep. It can improve brain functions related to sleep quality in children recovering from concussion. It's that simple. This is the latest brain mapping techniques, the magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, They scanned the brains of these children before and after taking either placebo or melatonin in a randomized clinical trial. And those who got the 3 to 10 milligrams of melatonin over a four-week period experienced significant improvement in whole brain function and gray matter. That's, by the way, that's the brain regions which are essential for sleep control and cognition. So that's good news. And finally, yoga and Tai Chi and meditation, those three, bring a lot of benefits to veterans. So this is a non-invasive way of helping people suffering from, let's say, post-traumatic stress disorder. This was done at the Edith Norris Rogers Memorial Veterans Hospital and Brown University. So three very popular complementary and integrative health therapies, yoga, Tai Chi, and meditation, lead to a significant improvements in key outcomes perceived by veterans receiving care in the Veterans Health Administration. So, and this was this is published in Medical Care, and that's good. So something more, something inexpensive, something easy. Oh, one last thing. I'm always asked, well, how if I don't eat a lot of sugar, how did I end up getting non-alcoholic fatty liver disease? A woman asked me recently on the street, and I said, simple. Excess fructose. Excess. Oh, I didn't know that was your sugar. Yeah, it is a sugar. And it can cause leaky gut. And that leaky gut leads to fatty liver disease. But today, the University of California at San Diego had this to say, quote, excess consumption of fructose, a sweetener ubiquitous in the American diet, can result in non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is comparably abundant in the United States. So, there you have it. This was published in Nature Metabolism. So for all those soft drinks, they're putting fructose in there. Don't drink them. Stay away from fructose. In the amounts that people are consuming, it's dangerous. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to go directly to this. We're going to do two back-to-back. The first is going to be this short interview between Ben Swan. And by the way, we're expecting a return message today from Ben Swan. He's an outstanding journalist, by the way, because we sent him three, and we don't believe in rushing people. If someone says something on a program today, I can't say I need to know immediately. People have lives. People have, you know, busy careers. They will fit it in, and they'll return, and whatever information we need to correct something, or if it is correct and they're just supplying us with additional information to support it, we'll get to it. And if not, then we delete it. But we're hopefully getting something today or tomorrow from Ben. In any case, Ben is interviewing Plandemic creator Mikey Willis. 2 minutes, 22 seconds, but something you have not heard, not been published anywhere. This is an exclusive. And from there, we go right into crucial viewing, to truly understand our current viral issue. You got to hear this, but more importantly, go to prn.fm, scroll down, and you can watch it in real time. Back in a moment, and then we'll do an analysis of the two things.
To discuss is none other than the writer and director himself, Mikey Willis. Mikey, thanks for being here. I think of everything that was covered in Plandemic 2, and then we hit this moment where you begin to explain about Bill Gates' history in India, his history in Africa. Again, to remind the audience, a man with absolutely no medical training whatsoever, and yet he is imposing secret tests and vaccinations without consent and even without disclosure to children in these the continent of Africa and then in the country of India. Can you share a little bit about this? Because you mentioned that, you know, this is stuff that's been wiped from the internet. How long have you studied it? And what are the facts surrounding this that essentially have been erased from history?
Well, I began researching Bill Gates, the vaccine situation, before the birth of my first child. He's now 9, so about 10 years ago. And ended up going really deep in that rabbit hole. And there was so much information that was available then that somehow has disappeared today. And that I found very shocking, because I assumed that once we jumped into Plandemic 1 and Plandemic 2, that I'd be able to find everything that I found 9, 10 years ago regarding India, regarding Africa, regarding Kenya. And I had dozens of researchers on it, and they would come back and just say, I find people talking about it, you know, but I don't find any of the actual data, the documents or anything else like that, and no video. There's no video of the harm. And I said, oh, there's video all over the place. I've seen it. No, it's not there anymore. And so we started to make calls and line up interviews for people that were there, direct witnesses. And so we spoke with a man who actually initiated the investigation in India through the parliament. And they discovered, after a very thorough, and his words, scathing report that came from this investigation, that not only had the Gates Foundation and the organizations that he was partnered with, not only did they lie and say that they weren't doing trials, but they also told the thousands of young, mostly women, that were involved in these trials that they were just getting wellness shots. They called it a well-being shot. So a shot that would just, it's vitamins, it's going to make you healthier and be able to withstand your harsh environment here. And they had wranglers go into these villages of the poorest people within India, and they wrangled kids out, and they told the parents who were illiterate, not even able to sign their own names, you know, that gave a thumbprint at the very most, or with zero consent at all, you know, that we're just taking your kids for this, you know, for this wellness shot, it's all good, and they're going to be fine, we'll bring them right back, with no consent. So they said, okay, and some of the girls didn't make it back. And a lot of them made it back, but not on their own two legs, because they ended up paralyzed because of the situation. And the numbers
are... When you say paralyzed, they were actually being given HPV shots, is that what they were being given?
Correct. And so there were, yeah.
Go ahead. And so that resulted in paralysis?
In mass sterilization. The paralysis happened mostly in Africa. But there were a lot of ailments that took place that enabled their bodies to function in normal ways. And I mean thousands. I mean upwards of 500,000. And so this became a massive issue in the one particular trial where 7 girls had died. The one that they had the parliament investigation around, they found, you know, that people had been bribed, that nothing was done. And again, in the man's words that I interviewed, Dr. Collin, he said that they were surprised to see American companies acting in ways as barbaric as India can be. He said they were just barbaric in the way they moved into the country and the way they lied and the politicians that had been bribed. And once this report came out, they vowed to never allow them back and to never allow this again. And there were no kind of awards to any of the kids that were damaged, any of the women that were damaged. And suddenly all that has changed. And he wanted to speak with me on camera because he said, they're back again. The one thing that they said they wouldn't do, they're doing now. They're back.
So just to be clear, so the 500,000 was in just India alone? Were those 500,000 girls in India alone?
That was India alone.
And you said that they were essentially being sterilized. That's actually the end result of what happened with those shots. They were being sterilized?
Yeah, in a lot of these cases, what the outcome is sterilization, because, you know, there are a lot of... This is where we get into theories, but I would say at this point it's provable theories, that there really is an agenda to curb the population of these third world countries. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And some of the reasons are benevolent. Some of the reasons are because if the populations get too large, they can't sustain themselves. They don't have enough resources. And then the other side of it is not so benevolent. It's really about controlling populations and taking control of their resources, which we've been doing, this nation has been doing for decades, forever. Yeah. And if you look at the Kissinger report, which is also featured in Plandemic 2, mm-hmm. you see right in the text that they literally had an agenda in Africa to decrease the population because of its minerals and because of its resources. It says right in the Kissinger report.
Yeah, I thought that was absolutely shocking as well. One more question on India, though. You mentioned that they were not allowed to come back. That they being the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, was it Gavi that was not allowed to come back? And so which group were you talking about specifically, or is it both?
It's both. From what I understand, all of the above. All the groups that were tied to these trials, this one particular trial where seven girls died, and they denied that it had anything to do with the vaccines, just suddenly randomly these healthy girls perished. That particular trial, the one that they did the Parliament report on, they had all said that they're not allowed back. And the Indian government made apologies and said, we're sorry for allowing this and it won't happen again. And it's happening right now.
And when you say they are back, is this the first time because of COVID-19, because of coronavirus, is this the first time Gates Foundation has been allowed to even be involved in anything medically in India? Is it as a result of COVID-19?
I don't know if there's anything in between that Parliament inquiry and COVID-19. If they'd been back before then, I don't know that answer. But it's absolutely because of COVID-19 that they have India whipped up in such hysteria that suddenly the people who said they would never do it again are now in line and literally being used as guinea pigs for the first trials.
Okay, and let's talk about Africa. So in watching the movie, it was difficult for me to tell exactly what had happened. Obviously, you had so much to cover. And so I want to get into a little bit of detail on this because we see images of children who are paralyzed. We see images of children who can barely walk. What are those images that we're seeing, and how is that related to the Gates Foundation?
Well, that was related to the oral polio vaccine that was administered more than once in different territories of Africa. And there are still up, those were fairly easy to find, a lot of reports that and studies that have proven that the vaccine itself caused more polio than it resisted. And so what you have are these young children in this case. In India, it was mostly preteen or teenage girls. In this case, it was babies, small children in Africa that were giving these, and teenagers and adults as well, but the children really were hit the hardest, and they were given these oral polio vaccines, to which we have on, you know, Bill Gates on camera administering these himself, despite the fact he's not a doctor, literally dumping the vaccine into the mouths of children, and all they know is that the children, they didn't walk after that. And so the amount of children who, if they are able to walk, they take tiny little steps because it affected their body in a way that is permanent. And it's absolutely traceable to the oral vaccine that they were administered. And yet all of this has been denied, and the parents have been fighting forever. And I must say that out of every community that I have interviewed for this movie, the community
on tomorrow's program. But what we have here is we have a case, clear-cut case, it's not ambiguous. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and their other groups associated went into India and Africa and used these kids as human guinea pigs. A lot of money changed hands. At the end of this, you have 500,000 children who are paralyzed, but they changed the term from polio to a flaccid paralysis. They did the same thing in the United States, by the way. There was no eradication of polio at that time. They simply changed it. A clever thing. We've written about that. And so here's Bill Gates walking around the world, handing money by the bushel baskets to all these different researchers, governments, and people, and he gets to walk free, no criticism. Not a single journalist has criticized him. Not a single media outlet. Well, why don't you talk with the parents who had healthy children who died or who are now paralyzed for the rest of their life? And this is the guy behind the vaccine, the Moderna vaccine you're all going to be getting in New York State. They'll come to your house and they'll give it to you. I read the bill to you yesterday on the air. That's an actual New York State bill. Mandatory for every child, but also it's going to be mandatory for adults. And then we also told you yesterday what's actually in the vaccine, all these nanoparticles, and what that could mean as far as putting information into your body and extracting information out, and how that could affect, make you nothing more than a branded cow. So just remember, we're telling you the truth. Our information is documented, and we stand behind it. And they will not debate. We've asked Fauci, we've asked all these people to debate. When Gallo came on my radio show, I asked him one question, he hung up. He went about to have an honest challenge to his false reputation. Anyhow, that's that. We're going to go now to the other one. Now we go from that into something that's very important, and that is looking for the truth behind all the misinformation in the pandemic of COVID-19. And this is one of the most important revealing clips. And if you can go to PRN.fm, watch it. If not, listen to it, and we'll discuss it afterwards.
So let me explain. Here we see many European countries, and they're all pretty much the same. Community immunity and the passing of the susceptible, like all viruses in history, has caused the death rate to come right down. Back here, there was an epidemic with high death rates, sadly, of susceptible people. And now there is no epidemic by any reasonable definition because the death rates and ICU are right down. Here's Sweden intensive care loading. They only reached around 60% of capacity, and that was in the epidemic. But now there's no epidemic, and there's only 32 ICU beds in the whole of Sweden, 10.5 million people. And they had no lockdown, no masks, and they're kind of just completely back to normal here. But if you kept testing with PCR tests, as is happening all around Europe, you'd get a case-demic and you could create a panic. So for PCR testing insights, you can go to CEBM PCR, searching in Google, and you'll get this excellent article from the Center of Evidence-Based Medicine. And the PCR is picking up people who are asymptomatic with no real problem. It's picking up people who had recovered from COVID a month or two ago. It's finding viral fragments. So the PCR test at this stage is driving hysteria inappropriately. I'll just show you a few countries and finish with that. Here's Spain. So we've recently, in the last month or two, got hyper testing and lots of so-called cases, positive PCRs. But the deaths are gone. In fact, they disappeared pretty much in May. Belgium, same story. Case-demic out here with positive PCRs, but no deaths or ICU. Ended in May. France, bit of a case-demic here, but the deaths are gone and the impacts. And Netherlands, we got a big case-demic going on with lots of testing, but you'll see months have gone by with no deaths, so there is no following death or ICU problem. That's a case-demic. What is going on? Well, I'll help explain what's going on, I would say. So this paper here was fascinating, a study done on around 50,000 people, and they tracked over 9 years all the respiratory infections, and they also tested for all the virus variants that would be seen. And here's the output, and basically we're not going to look at all the viruses, but we're going to focus in on coronavirus, which is the light green, and I'm going to highlight the winters. And in the winter, there's 15 to 20% prevalence of coronavirus. But you also will see 5, 3, 7% prevalence in the summer months as well. So you will always find viruses and virus fragments when you go looking. That's the point. This is very interesting from 2009 and the swine flu. So Ragnar Lives on Twitter pulled all this out from official documentation, government documentation. So we see here the tracking in 2008 into 2009 flu season, and you know there would have been mortality there for sure. But then something fascinating happened. A new PCR type rapid testing, flu chip, came in, and it was focused on looking at the swine flu. That was the flavor of the month back then. So what happened was, in the summer, there were really almost no deaths, but there was a huge freakout, a case-demic. And you can see here in the orange, that's the H1N1. And there was an enormous panic because all these cases were being seen, mounting and mounting, but they were primarily driven by, of course, PCR-type testing. And then into the fall, there was a lot of H1N1 being seen and huge amounts of tests. And again, people were panicking. but no one really died, or at least tiny numbers. And then it began to fade out and they just gave up testing. I think the kind of panic faded and that was it. But at the time, there were a lot of articles in mainstream media, you know, where there was clearly a huge amount of concern. And many of you may have remembered this period of swine flu where everyone was really, really worried. Lots of articles, epidemics, global cases rise. And we had mass producers scrambling. Yeah. And we worldwide, we had shortage of surgical masks. So this should seem familiar. Now, coronavirus in March, April, May of this year in Europe and in northern US and other regions like that caused a lot of impacts, you know, like some really bad previous flu seasons in the past 20 or 30 years. But the reality is now we are more in a case-demic, as I've described. So just to show England for the swine flu, similar story. We see here the seasonal rise in mortality in the kind of yellow coloured curve. And every winter we get a mortality spike. And this is normal and it's been like that forever. And down here we see test results. And of course you're seeing more positive tests in each winter season for flu. But what's this spike here? Well, this huge spike is like I showed you in the US a moment ago. This was the new hyper-testing of H1N1 swine flu, and it was in the summer. So you'll notice there's a huge amount of cases seen and a lot of panic, but you'll notice at the same time it's the lowest mortality rate in decades because it's the summer of 2010. So this is a classic case-demic again demonstrated here. So we must always look at the mortality and intensive care loading to tell if we've got a major issue. You can't use PCR testing because in the rise of an epidemic, it may tell you useful things. But when an epidemic passes, it tends to just fuel a case-demic. So this article is very revealing. It's the swine flu panic of 2009 in Spiegel newspaper, mainstream newspaper. The link is there. Or you can Google Spiegel swine flu. Those words will get you the article. And it describes what really happened in that whole era. They don't use the word case-demic, but you will find that the word resonates with what's in this article. So very, very interesting. So I'm going to finish with just again, reinforcing what I said. Here's Spain daily cases right up to August 6th. We got a case-demic going on here. But when you correct for actual mortality, real impacts, case fatality rate adjusted, you see that almost nothing is happening, as I said. And another view of it here, you've got Spain. This is from the government. And we can see the epidemic here obviously had, sadly, you know, very big impact in deaths, like a very bad flu season, essentially. And then we see the impact falling right off to around coming into June, you know, we're down to tiny levels. And you can see down at the end here, you know, that this is obviously not an epidemic in terms of impact terms. It would never even be noticed if not coming out of the prior epidemic. And if you keep testing out here, as I've said, you create a case-demic. So in the winter, there will be more susceptible people built up. You know, there will be some impacts for sure, though many of the susceptible will have sadly passed this year already in March and April. But in any case, now you understand case-demics. Thanks for listening, guys.
So what he's saying is, we've been confusing people who test positive for a COVID virus. There is no universally gold standard, 100% accurate test now to determine that it's the COVID-19. You could have had a cold 10 years ago, and it's testing you as if you're positive now, and that's not accurate. Also, there were hundreds of test kits around the world. All of them have been considered fraudulent or worthless garbage. So all of those public policies, including in the United States, was made off fraudulent fraud or fallacy because we didn't have an actual 100% gold standard antibody test. We still don't. The PCR is not the test. and yet we're telling everybody you must be quarantined, and now the evidence is coming in when you put all these people together in a quarantine, including older people and younger people, that's how the older people get infected. We should not be quarantining older and younger people or people who are not sick or not susceptible because they just have an antibody. Well, how often do we come in contact with a microorganism and our body is able to defend it and kill it? That's what the immune system does. Or unless we're very vulnerable because we have other obesity, that's a big comorbidity, and we're very obese. Heart disease, we have a lot of heart disease. Diabetes, a lot of diabetes. Emphysema, have that. Dementia, those six alone can be all construed as comorbidities, and the more of those you have together, if you have one, two, three, or four of those together, the more you have, the greater your likelihood that you will die. So what we should be doing is we should be isolating people and put them into a better medical model that we're going to discuss in a moment, because we have successful treatments right now. I'm not talking anything at all about alternative or complementary medicine. I'm not talking about ozone or vitamin C drips. No, I'm talking about orthodox medicine has inexpensive, non-patentable drugs right now to use, and it's been proven in published studies, in peer-reviewed literature, in clinical practice, they're saving lives. So the question is, why is the entire left, why is the Democratic Party, why is all the media supporting that, attacking the doctors and the therapies? And praising one that is completely experimental with terrible outcome. Richard Gale is here to explain all this. Richard, let's go through what people just were experiencing when they hopefully watch this or listen to it. Try to explain the difference between making a public policy or personal decision based upon the likelihood that someone will test positive, but not being able to 100% accurate say you have the virus now, instead of you may have a virus, a COVID virus, and we don't know how long ago it was. And if it's not recent, it's worthless anyhow. And that study just came out 2 days ago about if you have an older test, it's worthless. The form is yours.
Yeah. What was his name? Cummings. Ivor Cummings. That was the name of the gentleman we were just listening to. He was talking about what he called case-demic. Case-demic referring not to when we speak, say epidemic, we're referring to an actual virus. Here we're just talking about numbers of cases. Here's the problem. And it's kind of too bad if you weren't able to watch that video, because it's accompanied by many charts. And so it really gives kind of a visual image of what's really happening here. But he makes reference to this article that was published by the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine and by Dr. Thomas Jefferson, who has been on the show. He was one of the top viral experts at the Cochrane database. We had him on the show talking about the in efficacy of the flu vaccine. So I read that paper, that study, and this helps to understand what the problem is here. That study states that the PCR is helpful in detecting viruses as long as its accuracy is properly understood. Okay, but whether that RNA, the RNA of the virus, represents an infectious virus is not clear. So what this basically means is that he states that this is a problem with all RNA viruses. That's the SARS, the SARS-2, the old MERS, influenza, Ebola, Zika virus, and others, that you can be detecting this virus due to PCR long after it's disappeared. So it's kind of like it leaves footprints. If you're walking in the snow and you see the tracks of a bear, you haven't seen the bear. The tracks are there. So you're not going to, so it's kind of in a similar situation. So, our immune system works to neutralize a virus in order to prevent further infections. But while at the infectious stage, that can last a week or so, because the RNA begins to degrade slowly over time, but it could still be detected for months after the case of being infected. And so this is kind of what we're witnessing here, what he's calling case demics, is that these are people that have just these traces They were asymptomatic. They didn't experience any adverse symptoms or anything from the infection. They're just carrying it. The virus is long gone in them, but you're tracing these footprints that are still there. So if you keep testing and testing and testing more and more people, you're testing people from months ago who may have had some contact, and it's not even clear whether it's the COVID-19 or another coronavirus. It's just the common typical cold that we find every year and forever we've seen these different years. So I hope that kind of puts it a little bit into perspective.
Yes, it does.
Over-testing is, and then what he's really speaking about, when you all of a sudden we're just seeing this illusion of, and it is an illusion, we're seeing an illusion of these increased numbers of cases, and it creates a panic. So that's probably one of the more important points he's really trying to raise there.
Well, he's also stating that in his charts in these countries, you're seeing few deaths at all, but high spikes, and therefore the policymakers or the ideologists or those who have some intent to manipulate and weaponize the coronavirus for their own ideological, financial, or political needs, they then push a panic button. You've got to stay home. You can't do this. You can't do that. And that's simply wrong. In fact, the Thomas Jefferson, Elizabeth Spencer, John Brassey, these are all outstanding physicians. I'm reading today the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine report, and it says, are you infectious if you have a positive PCR test result for COVID? And they say in here, no. You know, it could have been, as you just said, it could have been something a long time ago. So we're making the public believe if you test positive, you are capable of dying, no matter what your state of health or age, and it's simply not the case. It's one thing to be appropriately concerned and take appropriate measures to defend those people who are at risk, and there are many at risk, and there are medications now that we can show that can help these people, and there are a couple different protocols, even with the hydroxychloroquine and zinc and azithromycin. There's 200 milligrams, and then there's 400 milligrams twice a day. So there's two different protocols. But tell us about the drugs that have been shown to be safely used and curing the coronavirus and should be used on those who are most susceptible, and the media is turned against them and putting all their energy into a drug that has very high side effects. You research the drug. So the establishment and Wall Street is going towards the very high-end drug, very expensive, and doing nothing about what we could be doing every day, and we could have saved probably 60 to 70% of the people who died if we did this early.
Okay. I think the main drug we should really be speaking about is the hydroxychloroquine. That's certainly the one that's received the most controversy, especially in the United States. I mean, this is where it really is. And let's remember, we're way up at the top there in terms of cases, even though it's a case-demic, but also in terms of just the number of deaths as well, because of just our incompetence in our being able to address the pandemic. But if we look at what countries are using it, you know, it's forget about the United States. Spain is treating about 72% of its patients are being given hydroxychloroquine. Italy, 49%, 41% in Brazil, 39% in Mexico, 28% in France, 17% in Germany, Canada, Poland, Israel, Turkey, Venezuela, all those countries, Poland, Israel, Turkey, and Venezuela have very, very, very low rates. South Korea, and China have been using the hydroxychloroquine for quite a while now, but they do one precautionary measure, which I think is important for listeners to know. And China started this very early back in, I think, late February, if I'm not mistaken, before they will prescribe hydroxychloroquine, they will do a cardiac exam on patients. If a person has potential pre-existing conditions of a serious cardiac problem, they will not give the hydroxychloroquine. So that's kind of important to know. But when we look at these other countries besides Turkey, Greece, which has a very low, well, they've had a spike recently. Malaysia, Cuba, it's almost non-existent. They're all using hydroxychloroquine, and they are using it very early. And there was a study that looked at all the global studies out there on hydroxychloroquine. There were 51 studies showed positive results. 16 showed negative results, but 10 of those studies were they were only giving the hydroxychloroquine to very late severe stages of coronavirus infection. So 10 of those 16, that's what they looked at. And we know that we should be given the HCQ very early on, or even as a preventive, as a prophylactic, as a preventative early on. And of course, if we look at Fauci's record, he based everything on the fraudulent Imperial College study that was used for locking down, and that study has been completely debunked now. And even if we look back in 2013, when Fauci was he was recommending hydroxychloroquine for the MERS coronavirus outbreak in 2013. So we just see all of this contradictory points being made. The Henry Ford Health System in Michigan did a study of thousands of patients, and their conclusion was HCQ is both very safe and highly effective in treating COVID-19 and reducing mortality by at least 50%. In countries with underdeveloped healthcare systems, so we're looking at Africa and all these other countries that have low rates. When I was mentioning different countries with high rates and low rates, I was only including the developed countries. But when you look at the African countries who are all using hydroxychloroquine, their figures, their rates are not even in single digits. They're just a decimal point figures. So, but the now what is being promoted now is this remdesivir, which is an it's an investigational drug. Gilead, corporation has the primary kind of commercial patents for commercial proprietary for it, even though the government. Your tax dollars have also gone into the development of this, and it's going to cost over $4,000 for a course of treatment. The interesting thing was a Chinese study that was done back in April when they were looking at it, and it was published in The Lancet, one of the premier scientific journals, but the trial had to be stopped before completion because of the high rate of serious adverse effects that they were witnessing in patients compared to the placebo, upwards to, I was getting figures here, upwards to 12% in that study. The Guardian posted when they discussed a trial of this drug of 158 patients, and for about 14% of those who were on the remdesivir died.
Well, again, that's insane. That is absolutely insane to allow 14% of the patients who die on a drug and say it's going to be safe. But the trouble is, the hard investigation that we do and others do will never appear in with Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, and Trump and the rest of them who are behind this, because it's going to be a $1 trillion drug. The first $1 trillion drug. And yet all these others that cost 16 to 18 cents, pennies to make, are safe and high cure rates, they won't be used. I just want people to understand you're being played, you're being lied to. And by the way, don't take my word for it. The New York Times, August 21st, 2020, Donald G. McNeil Jr., quote, "Why antibody tests won't help you much. Most antibody tests are useful only for large population surveys, diagnosis in certain children, or when initial diagnostic testing fails, according to an expert panel. Getting an antibody test to see if you had a corona 19 months ago is pointless, according to guidelines issued this week by a major medical study." The average person doesn't know that, and yet the studies will continue because it's profitable. and because it's the only tool they have. Finally, thank you, Richard. Finally.
Yeah,
what? Real quick.
Oh, I was going to just share just something, a couple things that I found that one of the Australia's top infectious disease specialists is Sanjaya Sunayake, on Australian ABC television stated that for COVID-19, we do not have a gold standard test. You know, the British Medical Journal wrote a study from Bristol University, the lack of such a clear-cut golden standard for the COVID-19. And it goes on with different people that there's no gold standard test for the COVID-19.
Richard, if you do not have a gold standard test, then how can you determine the course of treatment for a person? If they're false positive,
right,
then a person doesn't have anything, and you're going to overtreat them, and overtreating people leads to iatrogenic or deaths, and that's the number one cause of death in America. Or number three, we say it's number one, the AMA says number three, but they didn't count all the statistics for bed sores and infections and malnutrition deaths. Also, think of the people who come up with a false negative test. They have the virus, but then they're told they don't. So if you don't have a gold standard test, all of your public policies should be better measured to make sure that you're not going to do something as stupid. And also remember this, no one's going to apologize for being wrong, not Governor Cuomo, because to do so would mean that you put billions of people's lives at risk, their livelihood, you caused the decimation of small businesses and economic hardships unknown in American history. No one's going to take that podium and say, yeah, I screwed up. And they all screwed up. Bill Gates screwed up. The World Health Organization screwed up. The New York Times, all of them, they all screwed up. Now they're having to correct it because so many orthodox scientists and physicians are pushing back. Tomorrow we're going to play a rally by a professor in a leading academic and scientist in Ireland. And we're going to play that on the air, then we're going to do a comment. Lastly, I'm going to ask everyone in the audience, if you believe that we should have freedom of speech and that people's reputation should not be just dismissed and destroyed like Wikipedia is doing, then join a petition. We have sent out a petition, and we have been overwhelmed by the people who've signed it, the professional signatories alone. When Richard sent it to me this morning, it was page after page after page. And I'm looking at the names here, and I'm seeing top emeritus professors. I'm seeing Nobel Prize winners. I'm seeing, for example, Ricardo Matulan, MD, emeritus professor, family medicine, University of Michigan Medical School, PhD, from all over the world, like three dozen countries around the world, Israel, Poland, Russia, and we're getting, for example, this is an MD, PhD, Professor of General and Clinical Biochemistry, Northwestern Research Center of Hygiene Public Health, St. Petersburg, Russia, Dr. Igor Bondicardo. Thorsen Professor from Center for Consciousness, Lund University in Sweden, Dr. Cardenia. We also have a PhD, a Professor Cohen, Professor and Director of Integrative Medical Systems, Richard Hayes, Distinguished Professor, Clinical Cancer, MD Anderson Cancer. We have the Editor-in-Chief of the Town's Letter for Doctors. We have, I'm looking here we have a Nobel Prize winner here, the youngest Nobel Prize winner in history, and from Oxford University. We have all over the world. I was so blown away by how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these very famous people are sending over saying, yes, I'm on board, because it looks like all over the world, the hundreds of millions and billions of patients of complementary and alternative healing systems are finally saying enough, and these doctors and scientists are saying enough. We've been denigrated. By the way, the PhD is Brian Josephson, Nobel Prize in Physics, Emeritus Professor of Physics, University of Cambridge in Great Britain, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., etc. So you have a chance to join us in walking away from Wikipedia. Walk away. This petition is being sent to 500 of the funders of Wikipedia. Richard, real quick, because we're running out of time, show people how they can very quickly sign up.
Yes, and especially even more important, if there are doctors that you know or a medical any kind of professional in the medical field that you happen to know, please pass it on to them. And to sign, just send an email to Wikipedia Watch. That's just one word. There's no dot or hyphen. It's Wikipedia Watch at Proton Mail. Proton Mail is one word again, .com. Just your name. If you have any degree, higher degree, just give the initials abbreviation for that. And please put your the town or city and state that you're in.
Okay.
And if you have something in the medical, if you are working in the medical field, make note of that, please.
Okay. Any of the healing professions, any at all, because we are flooded with top-end people joining us. So this has become a huge movement. So we'll get Wikipedia's attention, you bet. And this goes out tomorrow. All over the world, we're getting responses. All over the world. We have to say goodbye to our WBAI station right now. But for those of you, and so thank you for listening, but anyone else can continue listening on PRN.FM. We're going to go up the end of the hour because I want to mention something else, and that is that tonight, I didn't have a chance today, sorry, to play that one clip from Melanie Phillips because it's a deep, deep thinking interview. It takes you to some places you have not been. And we have some very inspired intellects in this audience. James Vitros and others, you will have a chance to be taken on a tour of intellectual capacities that you haven't been around for a while. So please watch PRN.FM at 7 o'clock, Progressive Commentary Hour. Now, finally, we are very excited because the final protocols have been finally approved today for the upcoming mini anti-aging clinical study. The last two have been 90 days, and we've had outstanding results. We've set history on notice that this is something revolutionary. Anti-aging scientists from around the world and physicians have been in contact with us. It's going to be published in the Peer Review Journal. I'll be touring over the next 12 to 24 months to probably upwards, I was told, 40 different scientific conferences to present the data. But now I've created something even more. Everything I've done up to this point has been linear. And that's because the people coming principally are linear. And the older you are, the more difficult it is to change. Not everyone. There are people who are able, but by and large, probably 80% of the people resist change if it makes them feel uncomfortable. Oh, I don't want to give up that. I don't want to stop eating that. Oh, I like that. I don't want to go, you know, out to the gym. And so it's a real effort, and you have to be very patient and encouraging people, but it's necessary, and it worked. Now, this time, it's only 2 weeks, because I want to see, can I get even better results in 2 weeks than I did in 90 days, 3 months? I believe I can, because this time the protocols are based, completely different protocols, by the way, are based upon quantum change. Quantum change, like, boom. From here to there, instantly. Now, I work with people individually with this, and that's how I've been able to help so many people in their journey of healing and stepping back from the abyss of death. But this is for people 35 to 65. You'll give Lou Anne Panessi a call if you want to join me. We have room for two people. That's it. Two people. And Luann's number, and this is the last 2 weeks of October, will be down in a beautiful area in northeastern Texas where Louisiana and Texas and Arkansas meet, hilly, beautiful. And Luann's number is 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. For people who are younger, who want to delay aging and keep themselves looking better longer and therefore put a lot of extra years onto your life where nobody would know your age just by looking at you, then this is for you. People who are self-starters, people who are highly motivated, people who don't have to be nudged at everything, where everything doesn't have to be, I'm not so sure. No, those people shouldn't call. If you're one of those people that have to be convinced 1,000 times to do anything and then you do half of that, this is not for you. This is not for you. You'll be sent home. Okay? But this is for those like watch Chariots of Fire. This is for you who want to let it rip and grow. All right? It's exciting. And brand new protocol. Call 903-881-7008. Have a nice day. Bye.